All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, today we're going to be, this kind of follow-up on our last week's episode on conspiracies. We're going to be talking about an article that you pulled from, what is it, Psychology Today?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to talk about basically four reasons why we love a good conspiracy theory, like why our brains love conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll talk about like kind of these three core desires that meets for us. So there's kind of two different aspects. We'll take kind of the emotional side with these three desires, and we'll take the brain science side with these the way our brain works and why we love a good story and why they seem so freaking real. And I guess this, if there's not, I don't know if there's ever been in our lifetime a better time to talk about conspiracies than this week, this moment.
Cognitive bias is running rampant.
Yeah.
Today.
So, yeah, 2020 has been probably one of the best years of our lifetime for conspiracy theories for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would be interested. I'd be fascinated to see what the, in terms of people that, you know, the search traffic for certain conspiracies and, you know, books that are purchased on Amazon, what that would look like, you know, in terms of data from 2020. I would say, I would guess, if I had to guess, it would be considerably higher than any other year.
Yeah, we should have our guest back on that we had on, like, right when all this kind of started, we had... Yeah. Somebody on, and he knew those stats. We should probably pull him back on to,
do
a 2020 wrap up.
That
see what that looks
great.
Like.
Yes.
Cause my guess is those numbers have increased or, you know, and now we've got new ones that, you know, it was mostly about COVID back then when we talked to him. Now we've got all
QAnon,
kinds of stuff.
COVID, all the stuff. And now we've got,
Election tampering and everything else. So, and by the way, if you're yelling at the broadcast of this podcast right now thinking, that's not a conspiracy theory, you might want to listen to the whole show.
Yeah, you might want to tune in because what we're going to go through, it might be a good self-check just to make sure because I think we're all guilty of this to some degree. You know, after reading through it and going through it, we could all lay some guilt on ourselves for saying, I can fall into that trap because we're human beings and we have brains and that's what our brains do.
Yeah. As we'll talk about our brains are meaning making machines. So it's just what we have to do literally it's what's required to survive.
Absolutely.
So,
we've talked about, remember that book we talked about Thinking Fast and Slow on a few episodes there. And it talked about, you know, the science of how our brains, kind of like to skew things and categorize things and simplify things. We're going to be talking about all of that today. So
yeah, I'm going to put it all in one big bow, wrap it up.
That's right.
And, you'll still feel the same way after the show, but at least you'll be aware of what you're doing. Cause like, I'm aware of this stuff and I'm still like, yeah, but it really does make sense. I think I'm going to go with that. Cause I don't want the opposite to be true.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Yeah. So it's like, it's crazy.
Yep.
But before we get to that, we've got some beverages to partake of.
Absolutely.
I've got a crazy one today with the backstory on this brewing company is amazing. So, or the reason they named it what they named it is really cool. It's kind of a cool story. So,
is this one of our craft
it
beer?
It is. Yeah. Both of, there it is. Look at that. Just the logo popped up.
It's a voice recognition now. So just comes up when I mention it.
Is that a Chrome extension now?
That's right. Drop it in. No, it's an Alexa. Alexa, turn on ads. So I do have my notes pulled up today. So I'm going to read off our sponsor for this segment of the show, which is brought to you by our friends over at the Craft Beer Club. Outstanding craft beers from the finest independent breweries in the US of A. One of the best ways to sample these unique beers is by letting the original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork and tasting to bring you the best beer discoveries in the country. And you can learn more by visiting them over at persuasionbythepint.com/craft-beer. And with that said, Sean, you will be giving us the latest addition from your monthly stock.
Yeah. So I've got an IPA, double IPA. So this one's going to be, man, the IBU using this thing is 87.
Yep.
So that's going to be a little 87. I think that's got to be one of the highest.
Tarty, very tart.
Yeah. So interesting to see that, but it's called the Doug Ferocious. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a knockoff of Douglas Fir. Let me get the right angle.
Douglas Fir. Oh, okay.
So Doug Ferocious, because this is up in Oregon, right? It's a big tree country where they have lots of Douglas Fir trees and things like that. So that's my guess. So it's the brewing company is Gilgamesh Brewing. And before I read about the beer itself, let me tell you a little bit about Gilgamesh Brewing. So Gilgamesh. Like I said, they're up in Salem, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Does that name sound familiar to you, Gilgamesh?
It's Gilgamesh. Isn't that, isn't he from the Smurfs or something like that? No, that was,
I do know. Yeah.
What was the guy, the evil like guy?
The oh yeah. Was it the evil guy or the, yeah, I guess it was. Anyway.
I was always trying to get the Smurfs. I forgot what that guy's name. Gargamel, maybe Gargamel.
Something like that. Yeah. So anyway, Gilgamesh. So this is the back, kind of the where the name of the brewing company came from. And I thought this was really cool. Mm-hmm. It says the name of the brewery, by the way, was inspired by the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was written 4,500 years ago and told the story of a Sumerian demigod, King Gilgamesh. To distract the tyrannical King Gilgamesh, the gods created a bestial heathen named Enkidu to challenge the great king. But King Gilgamesh sent a temptress to meet Enkidu and present him with beer, bread, and earthly pleasures. It's a smart king right there. Turning the heathen into a man. And then Enkidu, it's E-N-K-I-D-U. It's a weird name. Enkidu and King Gilgamesh later became friends, drank lots of beer, battled beasts, and went in search of eternal life. It is Gilgamesh's brewing philosophy to bring a sense of community, build relationship, and make us all a little more human.
Wow.
It's a cool story, I think.
That is a cool story.
To know that a beer can start a friendship and turn heathen bestials into humans. So there you go. So next time you're confronted with a heathen beast, give them a beer and some bread.
But not one with 87 IBUs.
maybe not. We're about to find out.
So yeah. I could be wrong, maybe.
Well, I mean, I will say this. So here's a little bit about the beer itself. Doug Ferocious. It's a double India Pale Ale, 8.7 ABV and 87 IBUs. A bold, resinous double IPA, not for the faint of heart. The Doug Ferocious is a tasty and robust beer that's full of hop flavor and exceptionally well-balanced with a solid malt backbone. This is a backwoodsy distinctive beer with nice notes of grain, pine, and spice, and a refreshing, lingering finish. So it's going to have an aftertaste too, apparently. So,
yeah, it's definitely going to have an aftertaste.
So, but definitely lingering aftertaste. So I will taste this the whole show, apparently.
All right.
Go ahead while I'm pouring. You can.
Let's see. I'm pulling up. Ooh.
Basic Pale Ale.
All right, so I have a Kentucky bourbon this week. This one is, never had this one.
Like straight bourbon or bourbon ale?
A bourbon ale.
Like one of those days, huh?
Up on the docket for the Kentucky bourbon series is the peppermint porter. This is more of a Christmas. So I'm actually breaking this open a little early.
You are.
This has more of a Christmassy feel, but it was out this week, and it's a, just to give you a little background, this is a special release from the Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Company. What is it? Lexington Brewing Company. Yeah.
Okay.
It says, with just the right amount of chocolate and peppermint, this bourbon barrel aged porter is a perfect complement to a warm fire. Mm. Notes of bourbon and toffee complement the roasted malts in this brew. And the result is a peppermint patty. Ooh, okay. Peppermint patty cocktail in your glass. I'm not sure if I like this.
Oh, this makes, I don't know. This could go really well or it could go really bad. I don't know. Depends on how close to peppermint patty they went.
Yeah. 16 IBUs, 8.2% ABV. Okay. So we'll see.
We'll see.
Port and see what this looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I do love a good peppermint patty, but I don't know if I like it with beer. I mean, that's a toss up there.
All right. It's you're right. It's nice and dark. Look at the contrast there we've got.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Here we go.
Mm. I can just smell that like pine tree in my glass. that hint of pine. I used to have a pine allergy like growing up, like, you know, growing up in Georgia with all the pine trees, like in the spring.
Yep.
Crazy. But actually, you know, this is not as crazy as I thought. I'm kind of getting a little used to the IPA taste. I don't really love it, but I'm used to it now. So I kind of know what to expect.
Sure. And
of the IPAs, this one is, I think I like it better than most of the ones I've had. It's still really strong, really hoppy. But it's not as strong. I mean, it's got a strong smell, but it's not super strong on the palate.
Right.
Look at me using words like palate. Dang, man, this podcast has brought me a long way. Man,
you've just been educated.
I could have said it has a good nose and all that. So
that's right.
But yeah, so I'm gonna give this kind of about where I was last week with the IPA. Again, I'm not a personal fan of IPA, so it's hard for me to judge, you know, completely objectively. Mm-hmm. Our listeners probably know that by now, but I'm going to give it a 3.5. No, I'll give it a 3.8 because I think it's a solid IPA. Like it's a better IPA than, and it's actually, to me, it's got less of a, like a lingering, it almost has a dry finish to me. Hmm. So I must be completely backwards on my IPAs.
So say that score one more time.
3.8.
Wow. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
No, it's got a very, I think a very kind of clean, dry finish. So, which I like.
Well, if you're a fan of peppermint, little peppermint patties, you would actually like this because it tastes exactly like the first sip that you take. Tastes just like a peppermint patty. The chocolate mint. So,
but no, is it like overpowering or is it?
Mm-mm, no.
Ah, so it's good.
But you can almost, it's hard to tell. It's like between a peppermint patty, but when you smell it, it smells like the aroma is like mint chocolate chip ice cream that you're smelling. You know, when you open the lid, I mean, imagine you're opening the lid of the peppermint, chocolate peppermint, what is it? Chocolate chip peppermint ice cream.
Yeah.
That's what you smell. You smell that in this.
Nice.
It smells just like it.
Yeah. It's probably that peppermint oil or whatever they put in it.
Yep.
That sounds good. So what's your score on that?
I like, although I love the initial taste, the aftertaste is kind of not so great. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably going to give this one like, I'm probably going to give it 3.5.
Okay.
So probably could have got a solid 4 or 5, maybe off the aftertaste a little bit better, but
yeah.
It's got that lingering. I'm not a big fan of this lingering mint on the aftertaste.
Got it.
It doesn't leave you. It kind of hangs around.
Just hangs around.
It's lingering, kind of like you said. Lingering.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's a good kissing beer, right? Because you got the mint taste afterwards.
Freshen your beer. This is when you order when you're out with your better half, you're out on the town, concerned. You got one of those minty beers.
Yeah. Yeah. Got something the cops can't smell on the way home. No, officer, that's an Altoid.
That's right. But I do have to say, this is the aroma on this is really pleasant. I mean, I could just sit here and do this. Mm, that's good, man.
It's like a brandy almost.
Mm, it's fantastic.
All right. All right. Well, found you a good sniffing beer. So that's a win.
If I could find a candle with this smell, I would buy a bunch of them.
There you go. Maybe you can concentrate it down and make a candle out of it. Stick a wick in there and who knows, reduce it down on the stove. I don't know how you make add some wax to it. I'm not sure how that would work. We'll have to have a candle expert on next week.
Persuasion and candle making.
Sounds great. Sounds like a winning podcast right there.
Let's talk a little bit about confirmation bias.
All right. So you want to start with what's happening in the brain, or do you want to start what's happened kind of emotionally? Which list do you want to start with, do you think?
Well, let's start with the brain.
Okay. You
know, let's talk about our brain. So let's see.
Such a Westerner. You got to know. You want to know the logical side.
That's right.
All right.
Let's see. So I'm pulling up. Let me pull up the articles here.
Yeah. So this is from Psychology Today, which if you're in marketing, you should definitely be subscribed or at least occasionally pick up Psychology Today. It always has just at least one really good article that you can apply to marketing. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of other stuff you can really, they do a really good job, I think, of tapping into kind of what the current trends are in the country. So like there's a whole section in this month's about surviving job loss. Now, if you're into marketing, you're writing copy and things like that, there's a good chunk of your market that may have gone through a job loss or is worried about the jobs. Yeah. And they literally interviewed like five or six different people and how they felt during their job loss. You know, one was a very successful in the hospitality industry for hotels, and obviously got furloughed when all this happened. And so it's you can really get into their words of what they said about losing a job. And that's something you could put in a swipe file and use, you know, for a long time, is that feeling of the emotional toil that took on people. So there's those kind of articles in here all the time, and they do a good job, I think, of tying those things to kind of what's going on in the world at the time, which is a big part of marketing, is to be relevant.
Right.
And understanding what's going on in the psyche. That's why Eugene Schwartz, he did a thing one time, and he said, you know, you should go watch, and we talk about Marvel Comics all the time, but you know, you should go watch every blockbuster movie that comes out.
Yep.
Because that says something about the culture. It says that they're interested in that, and there's a reason it's a bestseller.
Yep.
So all right. So we'll start with the brain. And like I said, this article, so let me go with the actual chart here. This is the inside shot. Drinking the Kool-Aid.
That's fantastic.
And it says, the false believers. Why are so many people drawn to conspiracy theories in a time of crisis? So as I read this, some of you are going to say, well, obviously that's a liberal magazine and they're biased. Because some of the examples they give are going to make you feel that way. Mm-hmm. So just know that going in. But the science is still there. Don't throw out the whole article with that. But if you're on the other side, you may think this article is dead on. So it kind of depends on which side of the fence you're on. So let's start with why are we? So the question they put out is why we love a good cabal.
Mm-hmm.
Conspiracy theories are byproducts of how the brain thinks. Why are we so susceptible to conspiracy theories? Social science research has uncovered several mechanisms underlying our perpetual penchant for preposterous plots.
It's a lot of peas.
Yeah, somebody got excited on the alliteration. That's one of those things as a copywriter that you're like so excited when you write it, and then your editor should have cut it.
Yes.
Like two of them would have been fine, but going for four, over the top. So a little writing lesson there. Yep. So here are a few central ones. So we're going to talk about four different things that really make our brain buy into conspiracy theories. So I'll let you start. Do you have the copy of it still?
Yeah, no. I sure do.
Cool.
Number one, fundamental attribution error. So this is our tendency to prefer dispositional explanations to situational ones. See, this is so over my head sometimes.
So we're going to break it down. Go ahead and finish reading it. Then we'll break it down.
So when we observe an event that's happening, whether it's in politics or I think it's most relevant right now in politics. Mm-hmm. But when we see events like the COVID-19 or what's going on with our elections this week, which has taken up almost all. Notice how there's been no news about COVID-19 this whole week. I mean, nothing.
Well, there's no room for it in the news cycle, for one thing.
So, and that could be a conspiracy right there. I mean,
it is. Yes. You
know, so, but when we observe an event, we are much more likely to attribute it to some intentional internal motivation or motive than to a circumstance or happenstance.
Right. Our brains hate like randomness and chance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not good. Because again, like we talked about in Thinking Fast and Slow, our brains like to simplify. Remember, you got the system one and the system two brains. So the system one is going to take this information that's coming at us and try to give a simple explanation to it.
Yeah.
So we're most likely susceptible to things that are simply explained or giving a simple explanation to. In other words, you know, again, I had a conversation with a friend who we disagree politically, but you know, his bias, and we all have cognitive bias. So I'm not going to sit here and say, I don't have any cognitive bias, but his cognitive bias is that the people on the right, you know, the conservatives are a bunch of fascists, right?
Right.
The people on the right side think the liberals, the leftists, are a bunch of socialists, and they're trying to turn our country into a communist Russian style, you know, tyranny, you know, just dictatorship. So it happens on both sides. And so our simplest explanation for those people or what's happening to us, if we don't get our way, mm-hmm. sometimes is to assign a simple explanation. Well, it's either, you know, things are stolen. You know, that's a grand conspiracy. It's George Soros. It's the fascism of Donald Trump. It's all of these things. And it just wraps it up into a nice little package with a bow on top.
Well, yeah. The bottom line is it and all four of these will be the same ultimate conclusion, is it helps make order out of chaos. Right?
Absolutely.
Like, we don't want to think that we have this little control over the things that we want to happen.
Right.
Right. Because we're kind of, especially I think in the Western world, you know, as Americans, we're told from a young age that you can do whatever you want. You can have whatever you want if you just work hard enough and all that. And then you've got this global crisis that comes along like COVID. And you don't want to think that there was nothing you could do about it. So the alternative is to assign blame to someone else. Not that this was random.
Yeah.
But that this is created. So the very idea of dispositional means someone planned this for a purpose.
Right? Sure.
So Bill Gates planned COVID-19 so that he could be part of the vaccination. Like,
exactly.
You know, that's one of the conspiracy theories, right? And it was running rampant for a while and it kind of died down. And I'm sure it'll come back once the vaccine's released, it'll come back. And now we're at, and what's funny is especially this year, these have all layered on top of each other because there's so much going on this year that it's like, okay, so they're trying to steal. They are trying to steal the election, right? So this is the right side talking. They're trying to steal the election, and they're doing that with mail-in ballots. And that's why they used COVID, because then people would be scared. They'd have to stay home, so they'd have to use mail-in ballots. Like, all of this stuff becomes one convenient explanation. That it's all about the left trying to become a socialist country, and they're willing to destroy anything in their path to get their way. Right.
Absolutely. Yep.
And it's really
your brain can, like, regardless of what side of, because we're predisposed. So let's not stand on some, you know, some scale and say, or, you know, some platform and say, you know, we're above this because we're all predisposed to this.
Yeah,
we're
predisposed to one side or the other. So. You and I are both definitely firmly on the right.
Sure.
Right. So most of the examples we'll probably give today will be from our perspective and understanding that we know that what we're thinking is probably not accurate, and we're still susceptible. Like, we know what's going on, and we're still susceptible to it.
Absolutely.
That's what's so amazing about these bias, the way our brain works, is like, even when you know what's going on, it's so hard to
absolutely
to go the opposite of what your brain is just wired to do.
Yep. But if you can, I think one thing, if you can, even with, if you're predisposed, if you can get in the habit of actually questioning, and it's difficult to do, but if you can question everything that you so far, or that what somebody says, and that's easy to gravitate to, if you can start to question the logic of everything, but that's difficult. I mean, like I said, there's cognitive bias in everything, mm-hmm. but I just remember, you know, the whole explanation of COVID-19 was to kill Trump's presidency. And I started thinking about, like, when people would say that, I'm like, man, that's you know, that sounds good to a degree, but then you start thinking, like, why is this, like, why are people in Australia, like,
yeah,
why are they dealing with COVID? I mean, do they really care about Trump? I mean, because they're kind of under lockdown too. So they're killing their economy for us. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, you start to, like, you know, when you start to introduce some rational logic to, you know, ask questions, I think that's where you start to kind of debunk those. But still, it doesn't fix the fact that we're still predisposed to it.
Yeah, which kind of leads into the second thing, which is mm-hmm. confirmation bias and belief perseverance.
Right.
A lot of us, we've talked about confirmation bias. It's confirming, you have a tendency to confirm what you already believe, and you look for more proof of that. And belief perseverance is kind of the same thing. Like, you want to reinforce, and you naturally reinforce what you already believe, and you look for proof of what you already believe to be true. And, you know, big tech, like, they, you know, they know that about your brain, right?
Sure.
They take that. I mean, when they started designing the algorithms, they designed the algorithms down that pathway mm-hmm. because they know that's the path of least resistance. So that's why they started making the algorithms on Google and everything else. And one, just because they know that's the experience people's brains actually want, is they want more and more narrowed thing to what they already believe.
Yep.
So what we end up with is, you know, people go to the same sites that already echo their pre-existing beliefs, right? Like, it is so hard, you know, to, like, you know, if you're on the left, then you're probably going to watch MSNBC or CNN, right?
Sure.
And you would never watch Fox News.
Oh, no, no, no.
And the opposite is true, right? If you watch Fox News, you would never watch that. And to even, like, try to, like, say, all right, I'm going to go over and I'm going to listen for 20 minutes to this other channel that I don't usually listen to.
Right.
It's funny how, like, your brain, as soon as that starts talking, you start being like, yeah, but that's not true. No, that's not true. That's not true. Right. Like, you can't even watch it, like, without bias.
Sure.
Like, it's very, very difficult. The reason is because it's too much work for your brain. You'd literally go crazy if you had to sort all this information rationally.
Right.
If you had to weigh every piece of information, you would go absolutely nuts. Like, literally psychosis. You would have psychosis.
Yep.
So that's why your brain will start looking for these shortcuts and looking for these explanations so that you don't go crazy.
Yep. Yeah. Because we all want to appear, you know, it goes back to that, persuade, you know, Cialdini's, you know, the principles of influence. We try to kind of line our position up and stay consistent, commitment and consistency, so we don't look crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And at the same time, I mean, number three, the third point they make here in this article is, we like to be seen as uniquely knowledgeable.
Yes.
Right. So we want to know something that other people don't know, because then that makes us look better, look smarter, look more talented, whatever, you know, whatever it is. We get that feeling of a little bit of superiority. I know something you don't know. How could you not see this? you know, and the right will say, well, those people are elitists. You know, they think right. this. And then, right. you know, it's just, it's funny to watch. Like when you really understand what's going on, even though it's hard to fight, but at least you can see what's going on when you look at both sides.
Yeah,
it is kind of interesting to kind of see. But yeah, we want, so by having like all these details lined up in a conspiracy theory, it makes us feel like we know something that the other side or the mm-hmm. majority of, because a lot of people will, you know, dismiss conspiracy theories or not take the same one that we take.
Sure.
And I think that's what's so interesting about right now is the sheer number of people, you know, that believe in the conspiracy theories that are going on. And I can just hear people like yelling at the pod, at their phone right now, or their however they're listening to podcasts. Like, it's not a conspiracy theory; it's real.
It's real.
And I'm like, there's enough, and that's one of the key components of a good conspiracy theory. Is it has to have enough truth,
absolutely,
for it to take hold, yeah. right? You know, so it's really tough sometimes to tell the difference. And right now, like, you know, this is. We've been a nice, you know, we talked last week with our guest about, you know, how do you do cults and how do you create a cult, right? You have isolation is the mm-hmm. first thing that he talked Absolutely. About. And we've all kind of been isolated much more than usual, in some places more than others. And we've been kind of forced to go online, you know, scroll Facebook, yeah. watch the news probably more than we used to.
Yeah.
Scroll on Facebook more than we used to, read Twitter more than we used to. So we're it's kind of an isolation, even though it's not 100% isolation. It's right. kind of, we are kind of wired that way. And then with the algorithms, you know, kind of forcing us to one side or the other,
mm-hmm.
it really is feeling they are using that tactic.
Yeah, I agree.
And that part, I don't believe is a conspiracy theory. That's pretty much admitted by Google that, yes, we tailor your search results based on what you search on. You know, they admitted that years ago.
Sure.
So that part's not a conspiracy theory. But it does create a good, solid foundation for conspiracy mm-hmm. theories to take hold.
Yeah.
So what's the fourth part of this?
Pattern recognition. Truly, this is interesting. The brain evolved in a dangerous environment where the ability to fill in the blanks conferred important survival advantages. If you make out the sudden predator in the bushes, you might survive. The brain came to specialize in meaning making and pattern finding. It's interesting. In the absence of pattern, the brain will invent one and impose it on the world. The brain seeks order, cause, and effect. Yep. But life is filled with chaos, blind chance, and illusionary correlations, and also disorder. So the bottom line is we hate any type of disorder, any type of chaos. We just don't like that. We like to recognize and we like to see patterns. We're creatures that like, you know, systems, I guess things that go right. You know, it's, I think like every day people are predisposed to just liking their own unique lifestyle. You know, routines, I would call it routines that they do every day. Yeah. And, they like that routine. People are kind of, I mean, that's kind of where they gravitate to. And so order and chaos is just not part of our right. DNA.
Right. It's a routine, right? I mean, you take a shower, you wash the same order when you take a shower pretty much every time, you know.
Yep.
You probably grab the whatever you use, washcloth, whatever, in one hand, mm-hmm. the soap in the other. You probably start with one yep. arm or the other. You probably do within 2 or 3% the exact same pattern. Unless you're yeah. very consciously trying to do something different.
Absolutely.
You know, and even something as simple as like looking up at the clouds, we can't even look at the clouds without trying to find patterns.
That's right.
It's like, oh my God, we can't just have a white blob. It's got to look like something, you know,
it
looks like a bunny rabbit, right? Cause it can't just be a white blob. It's gotta be something. to our brains. Right. Our brains cannot stand not knowing and not giving definition to things.
Right.
And so the problem is the only things our brains can give a definition to is something similar to what we already believe or have heard.
Yeah.
Right. So it's one reason we get stuck in ruts. Mm-hmm. Is because, and same with marketing, is one reason our marketing looks the same over and over is because we get stuck in ruts. The niche we're in gets stuck in ruts. And that's why it usually takes somebody from the outside to, you know, write a breakthrough campaign or anything like that. Because we tend to see the same thing over and over. You know, I'm probably not ever going to see in clouds an animal that I've never seen or heard of in real life, right? Or even in a book or whatever, you know? So you know, it's just, we're going to get as close to a category. I think Michael Masterson called it the categorical imperative one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our brains are always looking as we're going through a marketing piece, as we're going through world events, we're always looking to categorize it into a nice, safe, familiar place.
Absolutely.
So that it doesn't hurt us. So yeah, that's basically pattern recognition is we're looking for, and that's why I think, you know, all these, we have so many people that are linking things together, you know, over this 2020, because in a lot of years, it's like one big thing or something mm-hmm. like that, but we've had two or three or four big things like all happen this year. And it's like, man, it's very tough emotionally and psychologically to think that this is all random and we have no control over it.
Absolutely.
So we have to create a pattern and an explanation for it.
And we have to, our brains are programmed. We have to have a villain in mm-hmm. our lives. So we have to assign blame to someone, whether it's Bill Gates, George Soros, whether it's Donald Trump, somebody has to be the villain that we can basically put all of this blame on. That's the simplest explanation.
Because we don't want to feel this bad, and it's just because we feel this bad.
That's right.
Like, it needs to be somebody's fault. It can't be our responsibility alone, right?
So the left is basically put up Donald Trump as their, you know, he's the villain in their story. He's the ultimate villain in their James Bond movie.
Right.
You know, and on the right, the George Soros is the ultimate villain in their James Bond movie. And so both of these guys get all of the blame. They get all, you know, everything gets assigned to them. They're at the top laughing.
You know, I will say this, like the left has done a much better job of picking one villain and the right has picked like 14 villains, right? We got Bill Gates. We got Nancy Pelosi. We've got like a whole host. We've got a syndicate on our side, right?
That's right.
And on the left, they've got like just Donald Trump. He's just
that's right. They have channeled everything into him. So
yeah, we've spread ours out across a cast of characters. We've got like the anti-Justice League, you know, or the anti-Avengers on the right. You know, that whole deck of people.
Think that's how we as human beings are, again, going back to how our brains are wired. Mm-hmm. You know, we think in terms of stories, we're attracted to stories. And in every story, you have a hero. Mm-hmm. And what else do you have? You have someone who is a villain.
Yep.
And so regardless of what side of the aisle or where you fall into politically or philosophically, you have to have a villain to pin your, you know, to blame. Or to pin so much of the uncertainty or the disposition that you're in or that everyone's in life, that has to go on something. And so we always are looking for that villain. And somebody
Otherwise, it's a really boring story.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
It's like,
that's right.
You don't see a Disney movie without a villain or mm-hmm. a Pixar movie without a villain. Like you need a bad guy to create the conflict, right? I mean, the three basic plots are what? Man versus man versus nature, and man versus something else. I can't remember what the third one is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got to have that tension,
right?
To explain why things are chaos.
Yep.
Cause it can't, you know, one of the great financial books, ever really is Fooled by Randomness.
Yeah.
That's probably a book we should dive into at some point on the show.
Oh yeah.
But Fooled by Randomness, you know, like stock market the same way, right? It's why people tell great stories about mutual funds or individual stock stories and why they won't sell when it when the story turns around.
Right.
Because you don't, going back to consistency, like that story sounded really good and I bought the stock, so I don't want to be wrong. So I'm going to stick to the story, even if it costs me money. Yep. And if it starts losing more and more, then all of a sudden there's a villain that comes in and screwed everything up. It's not just that I was, because it cannot be that I was wrong.
Right.
I think that's kind of what we're seeing in the election on either side. Mm-hmm. Like whichever way it ends up, you don't want to be the person that voted, quote, wrong.
Sure.
And the rest of the country was right. Like you don't want to be in the wrong side, right? You don't want to make the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. Cause we're all wired to want to be right. Cause that's safety. That's being part of the tribe or whatever.
That's right.
But when where
it
we
doesn't
are
today, go your way, there's a reason.
Yeah. And you want it to be a good reason. You don't want it just to be that you can't see whatever. You know, so let's kind of talk about that. There's three like key desires. Mm-hmm. So we kind of talked about the brain side and these four things that are going on in your brain. And then let's talk about, they specifically in this article they talked about the need for order. Mm-hmm. Is that people need to believe in dastardly plots because the world is just too confusing. We've kind of hit on that.
Yeah.
But there's three core desires that people have to kind of fulfill to kind of be okay and safe and go through life.
Yep.
So I'll read a little bit of the first part of this, the subhead of this part of this. Says it seems that every family has an Uncle Ralph, the guy who goes on and on at the dinner table. The 9/11 attack was orchestrated by the government. The moon landing was filmed in Hollywood. Oswald did not act alone in JFK assassinations. And with record low temperatures this winter, you expect me to believe the world is actually getting warmer? Why do some people believe in conspiracy theories? You know, why do some people believe in conspiracy theories? Psychologist Karen Douglas and her colleagues found that the reasons can be grouped into three basic categories or desires. So the first desire, and we've kind of hit on this already, is the desire for understanding and certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like we've talked about that, like, that's just like, we just not even logically, but we need to feel like we understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And when we don't, it's very, very unsettling. Like we just can't understand why those people would vote that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when it turns out that maybe they're going to win, then we're like, oh crap.
Right.
I can't understand that. So I need to construct this world where they're still not right, even if that's the outcome.
Yeah.
Cause at least then I'm not wrong and I didn't make bad choices. That's kind of what's going on.
Even in everyday life, in the simplest things, like if it's raining outside and it's, you know, you're ready to go to a sporting event, man, you've planned for this. And it's just like, man, everything is working against me. It just happens to be raining, or you're planning a camping trip or something like that. And it just comes out, you know, there's a forecast for bad weather.
Yep.
Oh, man, you know. It's Mother Nature is just working against me, or God's working against me, or whatever. You know, it's like, you know, you hit a traffic jam or something like that happens, and you're trying to, you know, you're on your way to a meeting, you get stuck in traffic, or a train, you know, is at the tracks. So you're always literally, I mean, there's no place for just complete randomness and everything. It's like, ah, man, I knew this was going to happen. This is working. It's just planned to work against me, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to assign it, like, you know.
But what's so crazy about that is the fact is a lot of the very best things that have ever happened in our life were completely and totally random and serendipitous.
Yep.
Right? Meeting your spouse, or, you know, that job offer that just came out of nowhere. Like, you know, because you met somebody 6 years ago at a trade show and they remembered your name and they called you up just when you needed the job. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's happened to me. You know, somebody I've worked with 4 or 5 years ago will call me up and be like, "Hey, you want to come work with us? We need somebody to help." And I'm like, "Perfect timing." You know, of course, I play it off as like, "Oh no, I'm actually good, but what's your offer?"
Right. You know? Exactly.
I mean, if you're throwing money, I'd like to know how much.
Absolutely. Give me some numbers.
But I was doing a training yesterday because I was prepping for this show and I was reading all this stuff. So I did a training yesterday for some people who have, you know, their own businesses, and it was supposed to be a marketing training, but I talked about some of this stuff kind of to get a warm up. Mm-hmm. So I'd be on for our guests and our listeners today. But one example I gave was like, you know, when you go out to start your car and you've either got a flat tire or the car doesn't start, right? We've all had that happen probably at some point in our lives.
Sure.
And we always be like, "Oh, why do these things always happen to me?" Right when I need to go somewhere important, my car doesn't start. But have you ever gone out to start your car when you've got nowhere to go? No, you don't just like randomly go out and start your car to see if it's going to start, right? I mean, like you only start your car when you're trying to go somewhere. So of course it's going to be a bad time.
Right.
But our brains don't see that way, right? They just see it as, "I'm in a hurry and my car won't start. Or I'm in a hurry and I get a flat tire, or I can't find my keys." Like, have you ever noticed your keys are never lost when you're not looking for them?
Absolutely. Yep.
Right.
Only when you're needing them and you're like in a hurry to get out the door.
Yeah.
That's when they're totally nowhere to be found.
So. Right. But if you're not looking for them, they're not lost. Even if they're lost, they're not lost because you're not looking for them.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. So, and we forget that side of the equation. We only see like the other side. So, and that's where we try to justify and be like, and try to get understanding and certainty.
Sure.
What's the second thing? The second desire.
Second desire, control, desire for control and security. So one of the things my wife can tell you, one of the things that I always, one of my favorite quotes is like, "Control is an illusion." Mm. And I get that from, I don't know if you ever seen the movie Days of Thunder, like the, like back in the 90s with Tom Cruise.
Cold trickle. Yeah, boy. It was like the serious version of Tall Dead Nights.
Yes, exactly.
Or as people used to say back then, it's like Top Gun on wheels, right?
Top Gun on wheels, exactly. And so one of the quotations that I always steal from that movie is like the doctor, you know, you got Cole Trickle and you got the hot doctor. Yeah, the hot doctor. And she's like, you know, he's like a control freak in the race car. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that she says to him, you know, in a huge argument, is like, "Control is an illusion, you know. No one has control." And so I've kind of stolen that quote. Now I've always said it. My wife repeats it back to me because it's so true. You know, I mean, but control is an illusion, but our desire for control, we're human beings and we have a desire to have control over things and to make sense of things and have some security. I think that's more, you know, and I'm not being sexist, but I think it's more in line with, probably females than males. Although, you know, I think there's that tendency in both areas, you know, in both sexes to feel that way. But we as human beings like security and control. So I think control, I think from a male standpoint is control. I think from a female standpoint, it may be security. So.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
I think a good example of this is, you know, think about the difference. You know, you're driving on the same street in the same car in the same city, you know, being a passenger versus being a driver.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you've been in like three wrecks yourself and the driver has never been in a wreck, you still feel more in control and more security if you're driving than if you're not, typically. Yep. Right. Yep. So, and there's like no logical reason for that. Like, it's just, you know, you just feel like you're more in control and more security if you're behind the wheel.
Right.
And it's that way, you know, experientially too. Like, if we don't understand or we don't feel like we can control the situation, then we have to start making up stories to satisfy, give us a sense of control and, and make us feel safe. And we've talked about that on the show before. We're like, the longer I do this, and the more I talk about this stuff, the more I realize that everybody just wants to feel safe.
Yep.
And it all kind of boils down to, do they feel safe or not feel safe? Mm-hmm. So, and I'll get into that a little bit more on the next one. So the third thing, the third kind of desire that we need for order is to maintain a positive self-image.
Mm-hmm.
So this one may be a little, may not be as obvious at first, but it says research shows that people who feel socially marginalized are more likely to believe in conspiracy theories. We all have a desire to maintain a positive self-image, which usually comes from the roles we play in life, our jobs, or our relationships with family and friends. When we know we make a positive difference in the lives of others, as a parent, a spouse, friend, teacher, mentor, we see our own lives as worthwhile and we feel good about ourselves. But what if Uncle Ralph is on disability, hasn't worked in years, and feels socially excluded?
Mm-hmm.
He has plenty of time to surf the internet for information about conspiracy theories and chatting online with others who hold similar beliefs.
Yeah.
And affords Uncle Ralph a sense of community, right? So now it's kind of like, okay, I'm not a failure because I got injured or I lost my job or whatever. Like, okay, here's a place that I can do some research and get involved and share what I'm learning with others.
Right.
And I feel worth again. Now, I don't think that's always the case. I mean, I do believe this magazine's a little slanted one.
Politically. Yeah, yeah.
But that same thread is like, like, it goes back to what we talked about with the brain. I want to be in the know. I want to I want to know something that other people don't. I think that's a big driver, for sure. But, you know, I used this in the training yesterday. Where's my notes from that? But talking about positive self-image, one of the things that I was talking about with training yesterday is like when you are thinking about buying something, right? So let's compare like the difference between a BMW buyer and an Accord, Honda Accord buyer. Let's say a BMW 5 Series and a Honda Accord, right? Mm-hmm. So basically the same car, you know, from a size standpoint and four doors, you know, four or five passengers, four comfortably. Those are two very different people, right? And they have this self-image and this positive self-image, you know, based on their entire worldview that they've accumulated over their lifetime. And so how can you have these two very different cars, price points and everything else, you know, and they both sell pretty well, but one person would not be caught dead in the other, right?
Sure.
The BMW 5 Series buyer is never going to buy a Honda Accord, and the Honda Accord buyer is never going to buy a BMW 5 Series, right? Because their self-image doesn't match that. Mm-hmm. And I read a great article, and it said, at the end of the day, the question that your prospect or your potential customer is asking is this something a person like me would buy?
Yeah.
Right. So they need to feel this like sense of community, and they need to feel like the person they've ended up being in life would do certain things. Right. Yeah. So, it goes back to like, if I'm a conservative and, you know, I don't see myself as a person who would let socialism happen, then I have to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
If I see myself as progressive and not old fashioned and always looking for progress, then I'm not going to let myself, you know, vote conservative, right?
Right.
I want to push things forward. I want to move forward, like that kind of stuff, right? So I want to protect the environment. I want to do all these things. Like all that stuff is kind of wrapped up in that. Mm-hmm. So you have this self-image and you have to maintain it. And when things, and when your choice to do that, you know, gets threatened or looks like the wrong choice, then you start to build these conspiracy theories around it. Right. Yep. So I've been trying to like dive in a little bit to the left and like, you know, try to see their viewpoint.
Sure.
I knew we were talking about this and, you know, I've got a friend who's very much on the left and thinks Donald Trump is the worst human being that's ever walked the planet. And, you know, I was talking to him about it, and, you know, we were talking about, like, will there be riots afterwards?
Yeah.
Like, regardless of which side, like, what do you, why do you think the riots would happen? Why do I think the riots would happen?
Yeah.
And the difference in the stories was amazing. Like, the, and both of us, like, you know, he's pretty open-minded. Mm-hmm. We can have these conversations. It's kind of fun to have, actually, because we're both, we're not going to change our minds, but at the same time, we get to see each other's point of view. So, you know, he sees, you know, conservatives as dumb, overweight rednecks. We, you know, we see liberals as kind of out of touch, elitist.
Sure.
Of course, there's a whole nation of people between those two extremes, you know, that are just trying to figure out life. But it's interesting to how listening to him and, you know, the same side of the same issue, how different it is and how you can spin it in your own mind to make it make sense and to make it line up with who we believe we are in the world.
Sure.
And it all goes back to, like, I've got to maintain how I see myself in the world, because if that's not correct, then, like, oh my God, everything falls apart.
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
If who I think I am is wrong, then, then what? Like, I mean, that's like an existential crisis at that point, right? If who you are is, quote, wrong.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I mean, we, in presidential elections or in politics, we've seen it, you know, having the same conversation with a friend who's on the left this week. And he's like, you know, Donald Trump under he's instituted fascism and all this stuff. And I just replied back to him and I said, you know, I'm just very grateful that I've lived under the tyranny of isms over the last 12 years, you know, because, you know, under Obama, apparently I was under communism and socialism, and now I'm under fascism, but that really hasn't really affected me too much, I guess. But I'm grateful that I've been allowed to succeed under these tyrannies. And, you know, and it's just, it's obviously, it's just poking fun at both sides, because, you know, both sides come at you with their own, you know, boogeyman, and what they're going to bring down upon us, whether it's, you know, fascism or communism. But it's easy. I mean, again, going back to this, it's easy to assign those on either side, because we have to make sense of it and we have to paint that picture, you know, that villain in our story, man, he's got to look really bad.
Yeah. Right. Cause it gives us a lot of outs. It allows us to not take as much responsibility. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
and when we do marketing, let's face it, the less responsibility we can make our prospects take, the more likely they are to buy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. You
know, and we kind of talk about that side of, it's kind of the dark side of marketing, but it's true. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can take the responsibility off your prospect's shoulders and give them a solution that doesn't require them to be responsible, you don't say it outright like that, but that's what everybody's looking for.
Remember in copy, it's not your fault.
It's not your fault. It's one of the most powerful phrases in copy. Yeah,
exactly.
So, you know, when the world goes to hell in a handbasket, it's not your fault. You tried to warn them about, you know, vote stealing, or you tried to warn them about fascism. Mm-hmm. So it's not your fault. Like, you did your best now.
Absolutely.
But the truth always, in my experience, is always somewhere in the middle, right? It's never at the extremes. It's always somewhere in the middle.
Yep.
And if you can slow down and see that, or at least try to see it, because I don't know that you can ever actually see it, but I think if you can try to see it, you'll be way, way ahead.
Sure.
Well, that's pretty good. We're right at an hour.
So. Yeah. Closing thoughts on this topic. You know, one of the things I would say is grab a copy. If you can grab a copy of this article, I'm sure you can go to Psychology Today, their website, and I think read maybe maybe not the full article, but you can get a summary of it.
Yep.
And again, I would like, you know, a good one of the best books on this so far that I've read is this Thinking Fast and Slow. Mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the, outside of Cialdini's book, that's one of the most incredible books in terms of explaining how our brains work and how it relates to persuasion and how we're so easily manipulated. So,
yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Well, I'm excited about the next episode. We're going to be talking about 21 tips, tricks, and tactics. We're going to get back to some kind of tactical stuff. We kind of went really big on this show.
We got you thinking too much on here. We got to get simple again.
And we're going to go back a little bit more granular, less worldview, and talk about 21 tips, tricks, and tactics to write killer ads and compelling sales copy from the late, great Clayton Makepeace. So that'll be good to go through and look through some of his stuff.
Sure.
We'll hit that up on the next show.
Okay. Thanks again for listening. As always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms. And I just want to mention sometimes I forget to, but you can check out our Facebook group over at facebook.com/groups/persuasionbythepint. And we're getting it seems like every week there's a ton of people that are like trying to get approved, coming into the group. So getting a lot of new members there. So thanks for joining us. And you can find all of our episodes. We don't post as often as we should, except for our episodes in the group, but feel free to comment. Just don't post a lot of crazy ads and conspiracies.
Or MLMs.
Or MLMs. Yeah, exactly.
I will delete those.
All right, guys. Thanks again. Sean, it's been fun. Great topic. And we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.